Clark Merritt, who is the Port of Pensacola director, longtime assistant to, longtime assistant director, but now he has moved into the, to Amy Miller, who has now moved up to the city as one of the deputy city managers. But, you know, he has been the port director for now 3 years, which seems simultaneously like yesterday and 10 years ago. Clark, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
It sure does, Andrew. It tends to go by quickly and very, very slowly sometimes.
I think the older we get, the faster it goes. I'm just saying, I've noticed that myself. It does seem to go by a lot quicker than it used to. I just wanted to talk with you. You and I talked a little bit yesterday about this as well, but obviously with the events that took place in Baltimore, my first question was, you know, hey, what kind of protocols for safety do we have in place here in Pensacola? How are we or are we not vulnerable to anything like this? We are obviously a very different kind of port, very different kind of setup with our bridges, different kinds of boat traffic doesn't come here. But I just wanted to hear from you because you're the port director, your thoughts about what happened and kind of how any of that might be relevant here in Pensacola.
Sure, Andrew. I certainly appreciate the time, and what a tragic event in Baltimore with that large container ship, you know, losing power at probably the worst time. Pensacola is a little bit different, as you're aware. The port is a direct line to the Gulf of Mexico, so there are no overhead bridges or structures or anything that the boats that call on Pensacola have to worry about. Which is actually a selling point for the Port of Pensacola because it's one of the quickest transits in and out of the port along the Gulf of Mexico. It takes about maybe a little over an hour, whereas some ports, let's say Houston, it could take you 8 hours to get to the port from the Gulf of Mexico. Now, there are similarities. We do have a state-licensed pilot that brings in every ship and takes out every ship. That calls on the port, and that's a state law. And he is a trained professional, and he understudied for several years under the other pilot who just retired. And additionally, we use tugs. I'm sure people have seen the tugs out on Pensacola Bay and escorting the ship as it comes in. And not only do those tugs help assist the docking of the ship when it comes in and when it goes out, but it's also there in case the ship loses power, which, as we saw, with the Baltimore accident, is exactly what happened. So those tugs can actually direct the ship away from, let's say, you know, keep it in the channel if it were to lose power, or let's say it's headed right towards the dock or the berths or downtown Pensacola, they can work to avoid some sort of tragic accident. So they're all parallels. Go ahead.
No. So, yeah, and I think that's something that as soon as you and I talked yesterday, it clicked with me that, you know, even the large ships that appreciate not having to, you know, deal with overhead clearance issues going under a bridge to get to our port of Pensacola, that because they don't have to cross a bridge, we just literally don't quite have this same sort of threat. But at the same time, you know, if a ship were heading towards the port and lost control, you could theoretically see where it could become a threat to Three Mile Bridge particularly. And that's, as you say, that's why we have tugs. That's, you know, we do have measures designed for that, of course. I started thinking about, okay, so not so much an issue with ships, not really, but obviously barges transit, you know, these bridges all the time, you know, especially the Three Mile Bridge, the Escambia Bay Bridge. I'm sure there are large vessels and maybe barge traffic that goes across the Perdido Key Bridge and the Bob Sykes Bridge as well. What kind of safety, what kind of protocols are in place to make sure, because as we know, barges, still very heavy, still very capable of doing a lot of damage. What kind of safety measures are in place to protect the bridges from that danger?
Well, that's a great question, Andrew, and that's a little out of my league. But you're right. The barges move through the intercoastal 24/7. All our fuel comes in via barge. The fuel that supplies NAS Pensacola for the jets, that comes in via barge. And it's a choke point right there at Pensacola Pass as the intercoastal intersects the access to the Gulf of Mexico. It's a very precarious situation if the mariners aren't really paying attention or if the weather is kind of squirrely, which is back to the Pensacola pilot. That's one of his the highest areas of concern or high stress levels is when he's bringing a big 800-foot ship in, and he's got to make that turn intersecting the intercoastal, and he has to deconflict with barge traffic. Those barges, they all talk to each other as they're transiting. They are very heavy, but they are professional mariners, and that's what they do for a living. I would submit that we see very few accidents. I mean, I've been at the port 10 years now, and other than, of course, the Skanska debacle, I have not heard of a barge accident or an issue where, let's say, a barge has had to divert to Port of Pensacola because of damage or something along those lines. Now, the Coast Guard regulates that industry, similar to the FAA and aviation. So, I mean, it's a professional organization, and you know, safety is always paramount for these maritime operations.
And you know, I will note, I didn't comment at the time when you said it, but I will note that the water and port guy said that it was a question that was out of his league. So I appreciate that. I have other questions that are, you know, not necessarily in your area of expertise, but you're kind of the closest person I could find to it. So just because this is the situation that happened in Baltimore, okay? So let's imagine that we do have a big boat coming in, something that's going to dock at the Port of Pensacola. Wouldn't normally transit a bridge, but, okay, something bad happens. They lose power. They're off track, off course. What would happen? Like, what would be the order of events at that point?
Well, it would fall under the Coast Guard. Coast Guard immediately would come to action. There's various Coast Guard assets. Of course, search and rescue would be paramount. We would be contacted. We would launch our security boat that the port has, a little rescue security boat that's available to us. And of course, the city has a fire department boat. We practice emergencies with the fire department, Pensacola Fire Department. They come to the port. They've done waterborne exercises in the past, so it is something that it is trained for. But the Coast Guard would be the incident commander. The county might even activate. Let's say the bridge was damaged. The county might activate their emergency management plans, like they would for a hurricane. Once again, the city falls under the county in that structure, and Chief Jenny Craner is the city's lead point of contact for that. So she would have to coordinate with us and with the various federal agencies, the Coast Guard being the primary one, to complete the search and rescue efforts, and hopefully everybody would be safe. And then it becomes a salvage operation. So as you can see with the Baltimore pictures, it's going to be a nightmare. They're going to have to get large barges out there, ships with large cranes to pick that steel up and cut it. I mean, this is going to be a months long project to open up that channel. And it, just like a hurricane, the Coast Guard's primary mission is to make sure that maritime commerce and activities can resume as soon and as safely as possible.
Absolutely.
So under the control of Sector Mobile, Pensacola falls under U.S. Coast Guard Sector Mobile and the organizational structure there. They really take over the show.
And that's something that I think, you know, a lot of people fully understand the Coast Guard mission and role. A lot of people maybe don't fully understand it. They tend to think maybe that the Coast Guard is primarily about, you know, security for the, you know, obviously the coastline and interdiction. But it's also buoy tending. You know, we have the buoy tender here that sits in the center point for the Blue Angels show. And then we also, you know, clearing and maintaining waterways is a crucial mission for the Coast Guard. Whenever there's a storm, you know, they got to go and make sure that things are safe to be used again. You don't have boats down in the middle of the channel that are interfering with people. And, you know, just all of that stuff is not a role we necessarily think about. And even like we have got what we have cutters here, what, five, I think. That's not really what they do, but there are other vessels that, as you say, under Sector Mobile, they would operate in that regard. And I even remember, was it Sally? I think it was Sally when, we had lost Three Mile Bridge and there was a worry that a loose tug or one of the barges was going to threaten the Escambia Bay Bridge. And I remember the sheriff at the time, you know, was basically saying, you know, we were thinking about how would we shoot down a barge. I mean, like, it's crazy the kinds of things that people have to imagine when you're dealing with massive threats to our commerce. No, that's all very, very useful. So that puts it all in perspective. And, you know, particularly the fact that our big ships don't come in through a bridge like obviously they do in Baltimore. I did want to give you a chance just to talk briefly since we got you on the line, Clark. Anything I missed to ask or anything else that you think is relevant for people to know about this, the application here to Pensacola, what happened in Baltimore?
No, I just think the public should know that these are highly qualified and skilled people that work on the waterfront, you know, every day. And as I mentioned before, I mean, safety is their primary concern. They follow checklists just like pilots do when they fly. They their equipment is kept in top shape. I mean, it's a professional operation, and they take it seriously, and they're doing it in all types of weather, day and night. Right? They're not out there on their pleasure boat when it's 85 degrees and beautiful with light winds. They're out there in the middle of January with 4 and 5 foot seas. But that's what it takes to move cargo in and out to support the local economy. And then on a worldwide scene, in the maritime commerce, I mean, hey, that's how store shelves are stocked. I mean,
right.
Those containers that everybody saw on the Baltimore ship, I mean, those were exports going around the world. And the same type of thing happens on the import side. So it's a critical component. Things just don't magically show up on the store shelves. It takes a lot of logistics behind the scenes to make that happen. And it all starts with the ship, even in Pensacola. You know, bulk material is one of the primary cargoes for the Port of Pensacola with our long-term tenant, CMEX. They import bulk cement, which is taken to the local concrete batch plant, and it's used in construction projects across Northwest Florida. So mm-hmm. It's a critical asset and a critical key in the economy regionally. So that's just a little area that sometimes loses focus.
Yeah, we don't. It's not always in the news, not always front of mind for a lot of people, but it's definitely essential. Clark Merritt, he is the Port of Pensacola director. Clark, I know you got lots of other things going on as well at the port. Just a quick update. Where are we at on American Magic? Where are we at on the pickleball facility?
Great questions. Both are moving forward. If you pickleball will hit that first, since there is active construction going on the site. If people are downtown around the ferry landing, they'll see that's the big building there to the left of the ferry landing if you're facing the bay.
Right.
And Rob Fabro and his team are starting construction on those outdoor courts, which is going to be the first phase. I think the latest as far as him being open is around the early July timeframe.
Oh, okay.
So he is making good progress. American Magic, of course, is the kind of the flagship project for the port right now. The sailing team that is over in Barcelona trying to win back the America's Cup and bring it back to the United States. They are in engineering right now. So we are working with the architects and the engineers to convert the building in the center of the port that you can see from Bayfront, the big 50-foot roof structure, about 55,000 square feet. That will become the training facility and fabrication center for American Magic as they relocate their 120-plus employees down to Pensacola to set up shop. So we're really excited about that. Magic is not due to return after, you know, fingers crossed, winning the Cup until late this year or early into next year. So we've got some time to work on that building, and we're really excited. We're making great progress in that realm as well.
Very good.
Oh, by the way,
somebody had let me know, Clark, that I guess we had in 1989, there was some kind of a strike on the Three Mile Bridge with barges and tugs. I was just trying to read up on it a little bit. So long before you were the port director, there was apparently an incident involving all of that. Clark Merritt, again,
I think I remember it. Yeah, I think I remember it. I think it shut the bridge down for a while. And it was very disruptive, foreshadowing of what happened at Sally.
I was graduating high school in the Chicagoland area, so I was certainly not familiar with that at the time. Clark Merritt, he's the Port of Pensacola director. Clark, as always, thank you for being available. Thanks for doing what you do to guard our maritime commerce and make sure that the port operates efficiently and makes the city money, which it's been doing for recent years. Thanks so much for the time. We'll talk to you again soon, sir.
Great. Thank you, too, Andrew. See ya.